Up next on the Bugsy Meat Show, we're going to talk some chalk talk, a little hardball, a little baseball chat with Summit City Slugger CEO and founder Mark De La Garza. Next on the Bugsy Meat Show. All right, welcome to the Bugsy Meat Show. Today we have a special guest, a baseball icon in the Summit City area. Mark De La Garza joins the show. How you doing today, Mark?
I'm good. How you doing?
Great. We're going to talk some baseball. So tell us a little bit about yourself and the organization that you've ran here in Fort Wayne.
Oh, shoot. I don't know where to start. I've been at this since 1995. I run the Summit City Sluggers. We have 13 teams right now, 10 baseball, 3 softball, ages, 11 to 17. We also run our own development league for 9 and 10-year-olds. So we have about 190, 200 kids that we're featuring right now.
So that's what we're going to get into a lot today. We're going to get into the development of some of these young kids around the area. Now, you've coached quite a few major leaguers in your day, haven't you?
Oh, there's been a few. I mean, Jared Parker made it to the big leagues. Josh Van Meter's made it to the big leagues. We've also had a handful of guys, you know, get drafted and play in the minor leagues for a little bit. It's a tough road. It's a tough road. You got to be really good. So I'm proud of those guys. You know, the other thing we've had is a lot of guys have gone through our program, gone out and played in college and used baseball as an avenue to pay for college and, you know, turn it into a pretty good career. We have several that are doctors, dentists, lawyers, all sorts of people that just use baseball to go to college. And they enjoy the game and they play in college and they have great careers and, you know, get a degree and move on in life. So it's not just about the pro guys. It's about everybody.
That's true. I'm in the travel baseball world myself. I run a lot of tournaments. But I want to talk to you about travel baseball talk. There's a lot of speculation about differences between travel ball, rec ball. A lot of the local leagues are starting to lose players to travel baseball. And sometimes they get upset, but on the other end of it, to me, a lot of these kids just want to play more baseball. They want to get more experience. What are your thoughts on the differences between travel baseball and rec baseball?
Well, I got a lot of things, and there again, it's hard to figure out where to start. First off, kids and parents, they want good coaching. They're tired of the daddy ball stuff that goes on in rec ball. It even goes on in, you know, obviously in some travel ball organizations, but they want good coaching, they want good organization that includes communication, and they want bling. They want nice looking stuff. You know, the rec leagues are relatively inexpensive to play in, and you get what you pay for. Normally in a rec league, you're going to get a t-shirt, maybe a hat, and you know, a handful of games, no rainouts made up. Sometimes you don't even have umpires, you know. And rec leagues are there, and they fizzled. I agree with you, they have fizzled out, and I think a lot of it is because of poor leadership in rec leagues. They have a lot of well-meaning dads, but those well-meaning dads have jobs. And I'll be honest with you, I couldn't run this program the way it is if I had to work a full-time job. It's just, it's not a part-time commitment. This isn't a hobby. It's a job. It's something you have to pay attention to every day. And here's my other thought on rec baseball. You see, when I started this in 1995, I could walk around or go around every little league in Northeast Indiana and cherry pick the best players out of that league and have them come and play for me. And I'm not going to lie, I did that. We had a really, really good team that went to Cooperstown to the Field of Dreams at 12 years old in 1996. And I took the best players out of their leagues. Now, I didn't tell them to leave their league. They still played games in their league. But at the end of the year, when we went to Cooperstown, you know, they missed some of their games and some of their tournaments and things like that. But then what's happened is, you know, I took the A-level players. let's say there's three levels of players, A, B, and C. I took the A level players. And back then, it was just me and the Indiana Bulls. They were the only ones around. Docs was around for a little while, but they were basically focusing on 17 and 18 year old players. But other than that, it was me and the Bulls. So I had a good squad, and I, like I said, I took the best players in this area and coached them. We spent a lot of time practicing. But then what happened, the rec leagues or little leagues at the time were left with the B and C level players. Well, then what happened, the B level players' dads all said, well, we want to play more games too, and we want to have nicer bling. We want to have what the A-level players are getting. So these dads go out and they form their own teams, and they start playing in tournaments that are available around. And then that left the rec leagues with the C-level players. And pretty much that's what's left there now is the C-level players, because the travel ball has just blown up. It's huge, and that's because there's so many dads, and all you really need is a checkbook. You can play in a tournament every weekend, wherever you want, you know. And it used to be that you had to qualify for a World Series. Now you just show up and the tournament can call it a World Series and people will pay to play in it.
And typically it's the same in basketball, volleyball, any kind of club level organizations right now. I mean, if you want to play, if you want to be an AAU basketball player, it's the same way. I mean, you get your local YMCA leagues, but if you want the competitiveness, you're going to go to some of these travel tournaments. And I mean, back when we were younger, we played and it was fun beating the baseball around with your friends and stuff like that in the rec leagues, but we didn't have those opportunities that we do now. And I think you know, going forward, I don't see it slowing down. I think the rec leagues, you know, I know they struggle to get numbers, but you can't really force kids to not go out and want to play this type of ball. Do you agree with that?
I agree with you. I think the rec leagues are mad at travel ball because players are leaving, and it's simple. They want to go someplace where they get better coaching. You know, the rec leagues have volunteer coaches. Our coaches they get a stipend. They get paid here, you know, and they're trained. And our coaches put a lot of time in, not only with their players, but at getting better themselves. So
now on the other side of it, you know, we talk about development and youth and the youth kids. I'm a big advocate for, I like a lot of reps. You know, when I work with my kids, I like to go through a lot of different reps. And I just think when we talk about travel baseball, like I said, I run the tournaments and I do my thing with that. But for the 9 and 10-year-old level, to me, do you agree that you should lead off? Because me personally, at 9 and 10, I think we take our focus off throwing strikes instead of, you know, worrying about the runner. I think a lot of the 9 and 10-year-olds worry about the running on base instead of worrying about throwing strikes. And I think sometimes that part of travel baseball kind of hurts the development of the pitching in the 9 and 10 year level. What do you think about that?
I'm not going to argue with you. Little League, I think the platform that Little League had with no leadoffs until you're 12, I was fine with that. I had seen absolutely no problem with how Little League brought players up with their rules. So to answer your question, I'm totally on board with not leading off, because here's what happens. You've seen it in tournaments, 9 and 10 year olds. You get a kid get the first, whether he gets hit by a pitch or walks or drop third strike, whatever it may be, he gets the first. Next pitch, he steals second. Next pitch, he steals third, scores on a pass ball.
Nobody's put the ball in play.
Is that developing a player? Is that teaching a kid the right way to play? I don't think so.
And that's where you get, you know, the mix of some of the travel ball dads like, oh, I want my kid to play real baseball. Well, they can get to that level at a certain point, but at 9 and 10 years old, I'm just not an advocate of doing that. Now, we run the tournaments because that's, you know, the rules of the tournament or whatnot. But to me, I don't think a kid should lead off to like 11 years old early. You know what I mean? So,
no, I don't have a problem with that. I agree with you 100%. You know, the game needs to be slowed down for these kids. And right now, when you put it into real baseball, you know, the development is an overused and misunderstood term, okay? Because you think about, let's go into the schools, all right? Schools are developing kids to learn math, right?
Correct.
They don't teach kids sophomore math in sixth grade. You graduate to that. And we're not doing that when we rush kids into this faster pace of baseball. Okay, we need to graduate, and kids need to learn how to do, you know, perform the basics of the game. Yeah, I think holding runners is part of it, but shoot, there's kids in high school that can't hold runners on. It's not because they didn't learn it when they were 9 and 10, it's because they didn't learn it at all because they had bad coaching. They need to get in programs where they have coaches that can teach them, and they have programs set up so these kids gradually work their way up to, like you said, real baseball.
Yeah.
Not just push them through and go, hey, we're going to play leadoff baseball. I don't think that's the answer. I think your way, where we go back to Little League rules, you know, and if you're going to steal, okay, the ball crosses home plate, and the catcher can throw you out, those sort of things.
I'm a big in agreement with that. But now to take me to my next point, so tell me about the small balls you've been working with.
What happened was, and I've stated this a couple times in other avenues and venues, I was running a rec league in Ossian, and last summer I had to umpire a game behind the pitcher, okay? And I'm standing there watching the pitcher try to throw strikes. But I looked at his hand, and his hand looked like he was, like it would if I was holding a basketball. He had all five fingers on the ball versus, you know, two fingers and your thumb. So it dawned on me that you can't learn velocity, you can't learn rotation when you have all five fingers on the ball.
Correct.
And you can't come up because you're squeezing the ball to hold it so tight, that tightens up your whole arm. Okay, that's how you throw a change up anyways. And then trying to throw accurately, it was very, very hard, very frustrating for these young 9 and 10 year olds to execute that. So it was about 2 weeks later, Tom House posted on, I don't know what, if it was Instagram or Facebook or Twitter where I seen it, but it was Tom House posted that every kid under the age of 12 should be using this 7.5-inch baseball. And I've been around this for a long time, never heard of this, never seen it until he mentioned it. So then, because of the correlation between watching these kids throw a nine and a quarter inch ball, I started digging into it, and I found the baseballs the same place I buy my baseballs from the same place for my organization. I had these 7.5-inch balls, so today I think I've ordered 30 dozen, and I put it out there last fall in our league, and I got great reviews from parents. I had parents asking me where I got them, how they can get more, and I gave every kid, I think we had 45 kids, I gave every kid a ball to go home and practice with, and then they had to bring it back every week, so I know that they kept the ball and they appreciated the ball. But Josh Van Meter was in here, and he'd seen one of my videos on that, and he said, this is a genius idea. And Dustin Butcher, the head coach at St. Francis, told me the same words. You know, this is genius. This is a great idea. So my thing is it takes leadership. It takes people to buy in, to change. People don't like change. They'll all revert back to, we've never done it that way before.
Right. But with going into that, like, you know, we talked about I mean, girls softball, it's no different. You got the 10, you know, the 10U girls, they use a smaller ball than the 12 to 14 and the older kids. In football, we're not going to throw the Duke out there and let these kids sling the ball down the field. It's going to be a smaller ball. So really, I mean, it's almost like putting a size 12 shoe on a little kid and asking him to run the bags, right?
Another good analogy.
And not only that, but, you know, throw a 34-inch bat in his hand. He's not going to be able to get around on it. So
right. Little League has scaled everything back. You know, correct. The field's smaller, the bats are lighter, but they never scaled the ball back.
Correct.
And it's, you know, maybe it's time to try it.
So we got a 7.5-inch ball compared to a 9.25. Mm-hmm. That's a huge difference. Like, my son, he's a little guy. He does the same thing. He palms it. Mm-hmm. He can't grip it four seam. And you're expecting, and especially like in the 7 and 8U leagues, especially. We played last year. We did coach pitch. Like, we would do like the first and the last inning of kid pitch. And there was times where it was miserable. We have an hour and a half game, but we'll have a first inning that lasts 50 minutes. Mm-hmm. So now the rest of the game, so we get a 3-inning game when we could probably have went to a baseball like this and we could have seen some strikes. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we were asking kids to throw a giant baseball in their hand, but sometimes even the dads can't throw strikes to the kids.
Absolutely.
But we're asking a 6, 7, 8-year-old kid to be able to consistently throw strikes.
And not only that, and 9 and 10s
too, because, you
and
know.
I'm not so sure that 11 and 12 shouldn't be there. I don't know. It's an experiment for me. I think it makes sense based on the logic of other sports using smaller baseballs. You know, we didn't mention soccer and basketball. They don't use the same size ball they use at the professional level, but in baseball, we're using the same size ball. And I also think that, you know, kids want instant gratification. They want success. They want to, you know, put in the time, go out and play, and have success. I think changing the size of the ball will give kids an opportunity to have more success, and maybe we'll keep more kids in the game, you know?
Yeah, because you get long innings out there that kids have checked out. And if there's no strikes, there's no balls being put in play, there's no action going on. I mean, and then people say, well, the ball is smaller. It's going to – won't that affect the hitting? I don't see any difference between using a broomstick and a small golf ball, wiffle ball. We do those drills all the time. So I think using this 7.5-inch ball would be beneficial to every league in the country.
Well, the flip side of that is you're not changing the bat. The ball's still the same. So the bigger barrel bat should be able to find that ball a little easier.
Yeah, I would say.
You know? And being that the ball is almost 3.5-4 ounces lighter, you should get some kids that can get the ball out of the infield.
Not only that, I mean, I'm gripping this ball right now, and I can tell you right now, my velo would probably increase about 15 miles an hour.
Yeah.
It might. You never know. I might be able to make the bigs throwing this sucker.
I've had a chance to watch games, and my coaching staff has had the chance to be a part of games with this ball. And I have guys that are pretty experienced in coaching, and I've been in all my coaches that are coaching in this D-League have played in college, and they all buy in. I think to not even try it is ludicrous, and that's being nice. I think everybody's got to try it.
And the ultimate goal is to develop kids. I mean,
isn't it?
Put your pride to the side and just try some things out. And this leads to my next thing that, you know, I've talked to you about. It's basically 5-on-5 baseball. Basically, what I would like to do, and, you know, I don't know, hopefully a league could try it, or we're going to try this in our stuff because we have 12 kids, plus we have 3 younger kids that we're going to use this with. But basically, you got 5 guys that hit, you got 5 guys in the infield, and you got 5 guys that will play the outfield. But basically, when you hit, you go to the outfield, you'll have your 3 outfielders, and then you'll have a pitcher and a catcher warming up on the side. From there, you go from the outfield to the infield. So basically, you have 3 teams of 5. Nobody ever sits. You'll get more at-bats per kid if some of the little leagues would start to, like, especially when the 7 and 8-year-old divisions, I'm going to approach our league with this. But if you have five kids on each team, you're going to get everybody be able to play the infield. Everybody's going to learn how to play the outfield, and you'll get multiple at bats. Because sometimes you go through these league games, and a kid might get one at bat or two at bats tops. But if you did it like this, you can get five at bats, possibly six if the game moves along. So basically, each inning you can switch a new pitcher. You can put kids in different positions, and they can learn different spots as well. But I think moving the game, doing it this way, the game will move faster, and kids will get more experience at each spot, and obviously get more at bats. What do you think about that?
You know, you brought that up to me in a phone conversation the other day, and I thought about it, and I like the idea. I think this summer I might try it in practice with some of my older kids, just to see how it flows.
Yeah,
because it makes sense. There's no one sitting. Everybody's involved. And you got 15 players. You got 15 players involved in the game. I guess the only question I have is how does an inning work? Is it three outs, or are we going through the order X amount of times?
So if you go, basically the inning would be you bat all five guys. So your pitcher that inning would probably roughly throw, you know, 15 to 20 pitches, which is fine for a kid at that age. You play it with no walks. So if there's ball four, then the coach steps in there, throws a pitch, keeps the game moving basically. And then the next inning, there might be another pitcher comes in. So basically you can develop, you know, hopefully get your whole team to learn how to pitch. You can get team, you know, like kids get moving around spots and getting them some experience where most time you might not get a chance, because, which brings me to my next important thing is being versatile. Kids playing multiple positions to me, because if you get a shortstop that comes to high school as freshman year and he has a sophomore that's a varsity player, he may not play shortstop until he's a senior unless he can beat that kid out. So do you agree with the importance of playing multiple positions?
Absolutely. But I think... Let me make sure you understand this. I think what I've seen in leagues, especially rec leagues, the coaches will rotate the players every inning. I think that's crazy. I've told our coaches, don't be doing that, because a kid's not going to learn how to play second base in one inning. If any player has ever walked out or run out to a position and played it, it's tough to learn the movements from second to third, the left field to right field, in a game. Or even in a couple weeks of practice, it's tough to learn all those movements. And then these youth coaches will bounce them around from position to position by the inning. So, okay, say you have a nine-pitch inning, three up, three down. That kid's out there for 3 minutes. Did he really learn anything? Okay, I say if you're going to move your kids around, move them around every game. Change your position every game, not every inning. Let them learn the position. Let them have time to get a feel for it. You know, I worked in a factory for years. It's tough to teach the movements of a different job or position in a short amount of time. You're not going to get it done. So my suggestion is you give these kids as much time as they need to start learning the movements, and then move them.
And we talk, you know, like I said, versatility. We'll move on to, like, the big league stuff.
Well, keep in mind, too, that Josh Van Meter's played every position in the big leagues except center field. Not many people know that. He had to go in and catch last year for the Pirates. He's been on the mound. He gave up a home run to Albert Pujols.
Yeah.
You know? I mean... He's played short, he's played third, he's played second. When he was with Cincinnati, he played first a lot.
Yep.
When they gave Votto a day off. So I think it's important to be versatile. I also think it's important for kids to play multiple sports, not just multiple
Absolutely.
Positions. Young kids, the more movements they learn, body movements they learn, from playing defense in basketball to being a quarterback in football, maybe playing soccer, golf, whatever it is, their coordination goes up and you can see it. Riding a bike, all that stuff makes a difference in a kid's overall development. going out and playing one sport and then breaking it down to one position is a bad idea as far as development goes. I don't think there's a doctor out there that will argue with me on that.
And, you know, basically, you got to be an athlete. I mean, to be versatile in the major leagues is a huge thing, too, because there's a lot of players that right now that are moving around. You know, you got Van Meter, you got McKinstry. You know, they can play multiple positions, and that, you know, you're not just want some one trick pony that's got their eggs in one basket, and that goes the same way with the you know, the other sports. But at the end of the day, you know, we put our kids through different drills, different T drills, different, you know, like. There's a ton of T drills. Does some of that, do you think sometimes that we overwork the different drills that's not like a game speed, like basically for a T drill, if I take, you know, if I'm lined up and I take a step back and I almost Happy Gilmore the ball, do you really think that translates to facing a 95 mile an hour fastball in the box in the big leagues when that's not like normal? Do you think like we overwork different drills and stuff like that?
That's a tough question. I think those drills are good drills for young players to do. Now, does a big leaguer need to be doing a drill like that? No. But I think the young kids do, and I think there's a reason. I think what coaches fail to do is they fail to tell kids why they're doing that drill.
Correct.
Okay, you use the Happy Gilmore drill. We're using that so a kid can get the feel of hitting off his back leg more. And that's mainly what we're trying to do. I mean, what's happened when I notice our young kids that come in here, and I'm talking 13 on down, they don't know how to use their body. Lower body. Oh, yeah. Their upper lower body separation is awful. And everything is an upper body swing. And I blame that on technology, the bats. Have produced results. So kids can put the ball in play and it'll travel further than if you're using a wooden bat. So I think if you're going to do anything as far as development goes, let's put a wood bat in the kid's hand. Exactly. And teach them how to hit, you know?
And, you know, analytics, a lot of launch angle stuff.
let's not even go there, man.
I mean, like, to me, launch angle stuff is something that you might teach in the bigs. Or, I mean, at the youth level, these kids ain't launching the ball 320 feet. You know what I mean? So sometimes I think we work on a lot of that stuff that doesn't need to be worked on. And at the end of the day, you get in the box. If you can hit, you can hit. You can field. You either make the play or you don't. You either hit it or you don't. But I think sometimes we get... Also, we give the kids too much to work with in their heads, and their heads are spinning. Their dads are talking. Sometimes I wonder if it's like overload for them, and then they just freak out and they can't do what we ask them to do.
Oh, I think absolutely. You can't give a kid a lesson during the game. You know, I listened to a guy one time. I was coaching third. He was in the third base dugout. He's literally talking mechanics with his pitcher on the mound. And this was a 14 or 15-year-old coach. And I'm like, that poor kid's out there trying to do what this guy does and try to throw to this hitter that's trying to beat him at the same time. It's impossible. I mean, you can't even, to even try to expect that is crazy. And of course, the coach got frustrated with the kid's results.
And then you know, janks him out, embarrasses him.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah, goes out on the mound and, you know, bitches at him and throwing his arms around. I'm like, you know, I'm on the other side. I'm going, dude, you just keep talking like that because we're going to beat you because you're going to mess with this kid so bad. And I think sometimes these inexperienced coaches, they must have anxieties or something. They just can't shut up. They feel like if I'm going to be called a coach, the parents got to hear me trying to coach. When in all honesty, you coach at practice.
Yep.
When the game starts, you shut up and leave them alone. And, you know, maybe in between innings, you sit down and you talk about some things, especially with your pitchers. or if there was a defensive mistake, you talk about it. But to try to correct it in a live game speed, and the younger kids, I get a kick. I got a grandson right now that plays basketball, third grade basketball, and you see the dads and the coaches trying to coach.
Godzilla dads in the crowd.
Yes. And then, you know, even the coaches, I'm like, they're not listening to you. They're not hearing a word you're saying. Their mind is going so fast. They're trying to inbound the ball and get the ball down court. They're not listening to all these delicate instructions that you're giving them. I'm not saying the instruction is wrong. I'm saying the message and the timing of the message is wrong. And the tone, yeah.
It's, you know, like we, you know, I coached basketball too. We had this, you know, we played a team. And their coach is going ape shit on the sidelines, mm-hmm. you know. And not only that, but it's frustrating our kids to where we turn the ball over.
Mm-hmm.
So you get gorilla dad that does that, and he's screaming, going nuts too. And I think sometimes you get a lot of that where, you know, the kids get frustrated or whatnot, and they just don't perform at the level
you
that...
You got gorilla mom too.
Yeah, so hopefully, you know, that's... It's never going to go away, but... I want to move on to some, you know, pick your brain on some the bigs. This year, the MLB the shift. What are your thoughts on the shift? I'll tell you my thoughts on the shift. I'm kind of liking that. I like to strategize and stuff like that. And yeah, you know, you move your guys around, but I'm kind of glad they're going back because I'm an offensive guy and I like to see, you know, I like to see big numbers, but. What are your thoughts on the shift? It ruined Ryan Howard's career, the shift did.
I'll be straight up with you. Right now, because of analytics, because of things like the shift, I'm kind of down on pro baseball. I think if you're a big league hitter, you're 0 for 20, haven't had a hit in four games, you should be talented enough to take a pitch and hit it the other way.
I agree with you on that.
Yeah, or lay a bunt down and then make them shift back. Okay? It's like if I bunt in a game and a guy sees a square up and he charges hard, we're going to swing away. I'm not going to play right into his defense. Why are they playing into a defense that's stacked against them? I have no idea where that makes sense. You get a left, and I see it mostly with left-handed hitters.
Yep.
You leave the whole left side of the infield open, and I just got to scratch my head.
Yeah, because you're on the left. You know, you're on the left side of the batter's box. You got a shorter route to first. Why can't you push down a bunt? You know, a bunt down third base line. There's no third baseman there. This pitcher's. It's a tough player for the pitcher. It blows my mind too that they don't execute that or they don't work on that in the game. But even with the shift, I don't think it applies to the outfield. So I think you'll still see the shift somewhat, but you're not going to be able to play the shortstop on the right side of the second.
Outfielders have always shifted. I used to watch, I watched a lot of college baseball when my son was playing, and I'd watch a center fielder.
Yeah.
And he'd get the second baseman or the shortstop would transfer the sign to the center fielder. So they knew if it was going to be off speed, there's a better chance of it being pulled. If it was, you know, if it was going to be 93, there's a chance of them being late. So they adjusted. That part I get. But this blatant shift where you got four infielders and three outfielders all playing for a left-handed hitter to pull a ball. And, okay, if you're a high school kid and that's all you can do is pull the ball, that's probably where you're going to be. You know, you're a guy that's going to pull it. But if you're a professional baseball player, I'm sorry. You should be able to take a pitch.
And shoot it.
Especially if it's middle or middle away, and shoot it down the right.
And I even, you know, you watch some of these games, and these pitchers still throw outside, and you wonder, what the hell? Why can't we shoot that down the line? It blows my mind, too.
I don't know. I don't have that answer. You probably have to ask one of them because I think we're just a couple of common baseball guys and we don't understand what they're doing at the professional level. And like I said, I'm down on the game, so I don't even watch it that much. I've got the package, the MLB package, but I don't turn it on that often because of that. And then you go back to the launch angle and the spin rates, and who cares? If the ball goes out of the park, I don't care what the spin rate was. I don't care how far it went. It's on the other side of the fence. It's a home run, whether it went over by a foot or a
nerds. Yeah. Nerds.
They wanted a way to get themselves into the game, and they found a way to get themselves into the game, and I'm shocked that people bought into it. The scouts, I know pro scouts that scout amateur players hate the analytics, you know, because you're talking about.
And we go back, like I said, either you can hit the damn ball or you can't. Or you can field it, or you can throw strikes or whatever. That's kind of my thought on it, too. I mean,
the analytics do not provide any makeup on what a player is all about. Is he soft? Can he handle failure? You know, the sort of things that are really important. Now, you know, obviously you've got to be able to do the mechanical stuff. You got to be able to run, hit for power, hit for average. You got to be able to have, you know, throw the ball across the infield and be able to field. But you also have to be pretty tough upstairs.
Mentally, yeah.
You know, and that's where you take these young players, throw them in, you know, right out of high school, into the big leagues. That's a man's, they're going from being a boy to a man in a real hurry. And you gotta be, you gotta grow up in a hurry. You gotta be pretty damn good and pretty tough upstairs and be able to deal with a lot of adversity. And you see it every day when you're on tournaments. There's kids that can't deal with adversity, mainly because their parents can't deal with it either. But I think those are key factors right there in the big league game is, just, you know, the analytics, the shift, the soft kids, the soft players. I think it's just had a huge effect on where we're at right now. And we can talk about Manfred, too. He continues to daily try to reinvent the wheel, which I don't like it.
Yeah.
You know, they're talking about now, moving the mound back.
Yeah, that's my next point. I got the mound distance. Now, you got, you know, back in the day, everybody said, oh, back in the day. Well, back in the day, you know, you see guys like Randy Johnson, Rob Dibble throwing 100 miles an hour. Now it's an average Tuesday night. Everybody throws upper 90s. So me, I like, you know, if I take my son to a game, this is just me. It's just my opinion. I don't want to see a 1-0 shutout. To me, that's a snoozer. I want to see a 16-15 balls flying out of the park, just absolutely going nuts. So, should they move the mound back 2 feet?
No. Leave the game alone. If the hitters can't hit it, get better. Get better at hitting, you know? Maybe you don't belong at this level if you can't hit it. If they can throw it, we got to have hitters that can hit it.
But, you know, you got balloon numbers from the, you know, Babe Ruth era. But were those guys throwing 98, 99?
They weren't as good athletes back then. They're better there athletes
is,
now.
There is.
I mean, you look at the size and shape. Babe Ruth was fat and out of shape.
And probably drank that. A pint of Jack D before the game.
Yeah, well, they probably have guys that do that now. But you don't see, even in golf, you don't see the big, overweight, out of shape golfer anymore because they can't compete. And that's the same way this game is. I mean, you don't see those big donkeys anymore. They're out, you know, just trying to stay in shape.
You know, same way with the NBA. You know, it's a guy like Muggsy Bogues might not be able to play in today's league, you know.
Yeah. Or, to go back and compare the way it was in the prior to the 70s, I don't think is even feasible. The game is so much different. They've made the parks bigger and nicer.
True.
I mean, you look at some of the parks. I mean, they got better restaurants than they do on the street outside.
That's true.
You know, every aspect of the game has changed. You know, now we're throwing gambling kiosks in the
everywhere
park.
You know? So, and we'll touch on that too. So, I mean, I think point shaving now is easier than it's ever possibly been. I mean, if you watch some of these NFL games, I mean, I bet DraftKings, and, you know, and I got friends, we're all gambling degenerates.
Mm-hmm.
But for the watch a football game, then you watch the last couple minutes of the game, they're just bam, 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 they can score. So all this money is coming in throughout the game, and the same thing goes for basketball. You see a team down, you see an NBA team down 20 at half, and they're getting 18 points. Bet the 18 points because they're going to come back at some point in that game. But I think now you could probably do the same thing with as a baseball player. What if you say, you know, hey, I'm, you know, what if I go 0-for-4 today? But somebody bets $100,000 on me to go not get a hit. I think it's easier now that these people that don't make a lot of money that can influence their friends or whatnot to go and place a bet for them. Do you think anything that could possibly happen?
I think you're talking about the integrity of
the players.
Yeah, and I gotta believe most of them have enough pride in their skills that they want to display that and not get hung up in the gambling side. I would say if that ever happened and it was ever acknowledged, it would be...
That'd be tough.
A minor, small percentage of players. Maybe one, you know. I mean, I've seen the college basketball player. I remember that.
Yeah, the Arizona State kid?
Yes. And there's a kid, you know, some bookie got a hold of him, and he was a poor kid to start with, needed the money in college. And
in college sports, I could see it more.
Sure.
Absolutely. I mean, there's.
If I'm not mistaken, there was a football player at Toledo that got in trouble a few years ago. Might have even went to jail for
it. Yeah, but I think, you know, that very well could happen. I mean,
I don't think
Pete Rose put a wager on the Reds to win a World Series for the first sports bet in Ohio last month.
Is that right?
Didn't he put a wager in.
There, I mean, there's another topic, too. Yeah. I mean, they just came out with the new Hall of Fame announcement the other day. He's still not in it.
He should be in it.
He was, to me, the best player of all time. I mean, nobody played the game like... If everybody played the game the way Pete Rose played it, it'd be a better game today.
It probably would.
You know?
So, pitch clock. Pace of the game. Moving the game. And leave the damn thing
if
alone.
If you don't want to go to the game and stay for the whole game, leave. We shouldn't have to put a clock on the game because fans don't want to be there. If you don't want to be there, don't go. You're not a fan. There's never been a clock in baseball. There doesn't need to be a clock in baseball. Your tournaments, you got time limits on your tournaments. I hate it. You know, I get it that you have to have that to keep the games moving. Otherwise, you'll have a team at the end of the day there at 1 o'clock in the morning. I get that, and that's why you do it. But I hate the time limit because then you got Daddy Wannabe using the clock to his advantage to kill the clock so that, you know, they got a lead and you can't get another at-bat. It's become part of the strategy. So a clock in the game, I think, ridiculous. Leave it alone. I mean, I think you have to, there has to be some sort of guideline where we're not being just a slow player. You know, you have to speed that part up. But, you know, golf did it realistically, you know, because Tiger was so slow. And there's some golfers that were just so slow. There's pitchers like that, too, that are just slow. And they need a kick in the butt. I had a kid play for me. 06, 07. Oh my God! It was like a human rain delay.
That's what I call my son sometimes because he takes so long to get ready.
Yeah, he would get the ball back, and every pitch he would walk around the mound, and then up the backside, get on the rubber, get his sign. And I'm like, we're gonna get 3 innings in today with this time limit if you don't speed it up, you know. But I think. Leave the clock alone. Leave the game alone. There's nothing wrong with it. It's fine the way it is.
Now, last thing I got for you, and I thank you for doing this podcast. It's been fun talking to you about baseball. Probably could talk to you for about 5 more hours if I really want to. But I'm a Bears fan, and you're a Green Bay Packer fan, and you're a big fan of Karen Rodgers. But we got the playoffs in full swing right now. Who do you got winning the Super Bowl?
You know, I do think about that. One, I think Rodgers is done in Green Bay. Hopefully the Bears can take advantage of that and maybe compete now. But the playoffs, I'm going to say the Eagles and Bengals in the Super Bowl.
You're going to go with local guy Jesse Bates winning the big game?
I just like the Bengals team.
Joe Burrow's fun to watch.
Joe Burrow's is awesome. You know, he's got Lamar Chase. They were hooked up in college, and they're still there in the pro game. I think the Bengals defense has got them where they're at. So, yeah, I think both games this weekend are going to be awesome. I mean, you look at the point spreads. I mean, one of them, I think it was the Bills and Chiefs, or the Bengals and Chiefs was a push. You know, and I don't think...
Early, the Bengals were a plus one. And I think it switched throughout the week. I can't remember what it is now.
What is it now? Well, we'll take a look.
I'm going to say Bengals minus 1.5. What is it?
We got Bengals. You checked.
No, I didn't. I really didn't.
The Bengals are plus.
I told you, we're gambling degenerates.
Bengals are plus 1.5.
Oh, they're getting the point. Yeah, the Chiefs. Mahomes' ankle must be feeling better.
And then the Eagles are a 2.5-point spread right now. 2.5-point favorite.
I got the opposite. I got a parlay with the Chiefs and the Niners. So hopefully that hits.
So you're going that way.
Yeah, I'm going that way.
You're a Bears fan. I can't expect anything less.
The only thing good in Wisconsin is cheese and Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah.
But anyway, I want to thank you for coming on here today. It's been fun. And we'll look forward to seeing you out in the dirt this summer.
Hey, same to you. Let's stay in touch.
Thanks, Mark. And we want to thank Mark De La Garza for coming on here and doing a little baseball talk. Hope you guys enjoyed it, and I hope you guys have a great weekend. This has been the Bugsy Meat Show.